So we now have time for if you have any questions or just anything you'd like to discuss, or anything you'd like to share. You know? What are you noticing? What are you seeing?
I really liked your use of the word exile, and I've been noticing a lot for myself in the last hours of, you know, kind of compartmentalizing certain sensations or experiences. And oh, I'd like to have that one go over there, but at least noticing it.
Yeah.
And thank you for that word, because that helps me kind of. Helps.
Good, yeah. And just one more word on the exiling. On a more subtle level, we want to make sure that we're also being with that which is doing the exiling. So there's an experience there, and I don't want it. I don't want to experience it. And then there's that not wanting it, and also being with that too, because then it could be a double exile, right? I don't want it, and I don't want the wanting to be there either. Yeah, so to be aware, because there could be, oh, I should be accepting this right now, because that's what we were talking about this morning. But then it's not seeing the other aspect of the not wanting. So it's important to really see that, because what can happen is then there can be really this fight, in the sense of, oh, I should be accepting this and just being with it. But there's something there that doesn't want it there. And a lot of times you can really feel kind of an opening up if really just accepting the dynamic that's going on.
Somewhat related to that, in one of my sits early on, I thought about what you'd been saying about the Rinpoche and Tibetan tradition, and coming in and welcoming in all of the, I don't know, demons and gods and whatever, mm-hmm. rather than exiling them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about Obama, and I thought about how he's sometimes to my concern been so welcoming and really been trying to work things out with people that seem immovable and certainly very upset.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought this made me think about his process and what he's trying to do in a kind of a bigger way. I thought it was just kind of an interesting comparison.
And hopefully the more we are with the immovable aspects of our experience, we come to learn how to be with that which is immovable in the world. Yeah, and I think that's hopefully the direction that our practice is going in, is that the more we get more of a taste of freedom or being able to be with what's there, it allows for a deeper response not only to what's going on inside, but what's around us.
I was really noticing the wanting mind a lot in different aspects.
Mm.
And one was during lunch, you know, eating, as I'm eating my sandwich and enjoying the flavor and so forth, I'm aware, I want more. And I would really like to be able to continue to eat this, you know,
mm-hmm.
ad infinitum, go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
It was so interesting that just came up. I wanted to prolong the pleasure of eating. And the other aspect I noticed was in walking around outside and seeing. And then there's the wanting. Sometimes it's just a little wanting to know more, you know, what's going on there?
Yeah.
You know, what is that?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
about that? And,
yeah.
you know, there's just that quick.
Yes.
Like that,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
see.
And it's really, I love how your body's leaning
yeah.
forward with that, because there's
yeah.
a leaning forward
yeah.
almost. What's the experience out there? You know, what's going to happen next with it,
right.
or something like that, rather than
mm-hmm.
what's, you know, what we're trying to cultivate is what is this experience that's going on inside in relation to that.
Right.
Yeah, and it's difficult because it's,
yeah,
you know,
the light is gone.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so nice to see that, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I found that being in this environment as opposed to being in a more natural environment where I've done other meditations is quite a different experience, because the urban industrial nature of the concrete and the street and the juxtaposed to the more sparse areas of nature, the flowering trees and the other little plants that are growing around the buildings. And at first I'm drawn to the flowering plants, they're so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice that, and then I notice, well, there's beauty also in the concrete and the pavement. And I began noticing other kinds of things, qualities and characters to cracks in the pavement that I wouldn't ordinarily have noticed.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of a richness of experience starts to unfold when we're really with it, in a sense.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's the fascinating thing of being aware of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, is that it helps see the dynamic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dynamic of how that can jump over into craving, pushing away or grabbing onto. But also, I think it also allows us to be with the richness. You know, I think one of the things I was noticing when I was eating lunch is just the richness of pleasant and unpleasant intertwined together.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a bite, just in chewing, there was such a variety there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that goes, and of course that can jump over to something else, but also being with that can be really enriching, I think. That's what I'm hearing you kind of sharing that on that level.
Well, when you were speaking earlier about the idea of continuity being a way of recognizing impermanence, it really struck me as seemingly contradictory ideas. And I noticed a lot in the sound, experience of sound outside in the urban environment, that I just really could see the tendency to note something and run back kind of away from it rather than following it to its extension.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thank you for that, distinguishing that. It just seems like it broadens this whole
nice
work. And
great.
Yeah.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. Nice. Yeah. Did anybody else explore this continuity or notice that difference, in a sense, happening? Rhonda?
I noticed it with the birds a lot, because of what you said about following it through. Like, I listened to the whole conversation rather than just noting birds.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. Yeah, it made it a more fuller experience. But I noticed for myself this morning, I'm exiling drivel and boredom,
mm-hmm.
and also noticing the craving for stimulation for my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's having withdrawals.
If we see you in the corner with the jitters, then we know what's going on. It's a rich thing to be with. It's such an important thing, important experience to be with.
Mm.
With boredom?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
What do you do when you be with it? Just.
Yeah, it almost has that quality of not wanting to be with, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I need something else. Yeah, and I think a good place to start is just acknowledging there's some aspect of your experience that's wanting something else.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, And sometimes I'll even, you know, when something's intense, if something's intense like that, sometimes I'll just, it's almost like I'll let it know that I hear it. And the reason why I use this phrasing, I let it know that I hear it, is because when I hear it, it's a way of introducing presence in a place, or being present in an experience where there might not be very much, because it's so much of an experience. Does that make sense? If I'm having an experience such as boredom, and I'm lost in it, right? I am bored. I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
You know, there's some really cool tankas around here. Yeah. Maybe doing something else. And I want something to happen. This is not. Mm-hmm. What can I find something to happen? At that point, when it's that intense, a lot of times I find that I'm drowning in the experience and I'm not witnessing it anymore. I'm not seeing it, right?
Yeah.
I don't have the ability to be like, oh, boredom, let me check it out. Mm-hmm. What's that feel like? I'm lost in it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, sometimes if I have the idea, okay, I'm going to meditate on this, it doesn't help. Have you noticed that? So we have this idea that it's going to help. That's what we're supposed to do. Oh, yeah, we're supposed to go back to our true home, being present. Let me give that a try. Oh, I'm just bored. Sometimes that doesn't work. So then we need to find a different intervention, you could say. If just labeling boredom doesn't allow us to see it, then something, it's important, I think, to try something else to get being present online, in terms of, oh, I'm hearing there's something that's really bored. I'm sensing something that's really bored, and I'm just going to acknowledge it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice with the languaging, what I'm doing is I'm not bored, mm-hmm. there's something that's bored.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I'm acknowledging it and I'm hearing it. Both have qualities of presence, witnessing it, and also acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I say to you, I really hear you, you know, I'm being present with you, but I'm also accepting what you're hearing. So that can be a useful step to being with something. Yeah, sure. Joanie, did you have something?
It was more of a question. it is said that we don't do anything unless there's an intention that goes ahead. Well, quite frequently I've had this happen when I'm sitting, that various parts of my body will decide to take off on their own.
Such as
like an arm or something, you know, almost like I get a twitch of some sort.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think I'm thinking about doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, a couple things about that. And, I mean, part of it is physiological, and it does also bleed over into some of the things that we want to pay attention to. Is sometimes there is this kind of this almost physiological or neurological twitch, you could say, just the body doing that, and sometimes it's, you know, connected with other things. Yeah. How to explain this? In some ways, when we do this practice, this is going to be a long-winded way of answering this, but hopefully it will speak to it a little bit, is that we're bringing almost fluidity into our system. Fluidity into, you could say that a lot of times what happens after this kind of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral aspect of our experience, then there's this kind of grasping or pushing away, which is more of this kind of frozen way, stuck way of being with our experience.
Mm.
And have you noticed that feeling that comes with wanting or not wanting? It feels stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
You can have that feeling of feeling stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the arising of suffering comes from these qualities of experience that seem to have this stuck flavor to it. And it seems like more when there's more being able to be awake and being aware, there's this fluidity there. Okay, so that's a way of understanding this practice, is that there's not only in our minds, but within our entire being, this movement towards fluidity. on the physiological level, it's interesting. There are things that kind of get stuck in us in terms of, you could say, in terms of belief, right? I have the belief that I'm helpless, and that belief colors my world, and it's a stuck idea. And then I live the world in a stuck way. But then there could be also, even with that thought, there can be also, we always forget, you know, we always think about stuck belief systems. It's funny that, you know, psychology only looks at the belief system. What about the body? Mm-hmm. A lot of times there's something stuck, literally stuck in the body in a way. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times there is a stuck movement. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there are movements or twitches that are incomplete responses. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to sit still, and I really want to encourage us to sit still. And sometimes there are these impulses that we need to allow to happen. And what's important just in terms of physiologically is it's not even allowing the movement to do what it wants to do, but just feeling that impulse if it comes up and allowing that impulse to be there and move through, you could say. So it's just one more thing to be with, to see, and allow to be there. And sometimes with twitches, not all, sometimes that's what's going on, is it's allowing something to complete so that there can be more fluidity in the system. Mm-hmm. And again, our job is the same. We just need to be present and to allow. So we don't need to understand it. We really don't need to understand it. It's really that simple, really seeing. Is that, yeah, so I have no idea what's going on, and and these are some possibilities.
You know, I had a question, or kind of comment and question about being with things unfolding when it has to do with thoughts, because an experience of a bird is, you know, is easily translatable to me of the value of really being with that. With thought, especially with this active mind, my experience is that sometimes it's really sort of early stages of papancha. To be with a thought. The other side of it can be that it's really a fruitful thing that while sitting to allow something to develop a little. It's this tension between being with thought and generative practice and returning to a breath or returning to something. For instance, I think an example probably helps. I made a choice when a thought about writing a letter to a friend that I need to write where there's some conflict that we're working out. Mm-hmm. It seemed fruitful to let that, you know, sometimes I can write letters in my mind all the time and it's just papancha. Mm-hmm. But this one seemed a good thing to stay with it a bit, to think about how to use right speech really carefully in a tricky moment like that. Mm-hmm. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you, given that example, if you can expound on that choice that we're making in microseconds all the time.
Especially,
I find the trickiest one's thoughts, how much to let that unfold, how much to curb it.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of our pursuit of suffering.
Yeah, so and let me know if I'm answering your question or giving helpful feedback or not. I think kind of what you're describing around skillful speech, there is a place in this practice for wisely reflecting on what to do next, on what's next. And to sense inside as a way of kind of sensing inside as a way to figure out skillfully how to word something or to say something. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely a place for that. And I think that's important in terms of being in the world. And it's important to distinguish that from what we're doing here in terms of this practice. Mm-hmm. That at least the way I'm talking about Vipassana practice in this manner is that it is something different, and it's really setting that aside. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, you're your own master, so you decide when to do this. But Vipassana, I mean, and that's the thing about meditation is so many things can come out of meditation. I mean, this whole creative process can come out of meditation also. I mean, a lot of times people find these kind of wellsprings of creativity that can arise from meditation. And that's still a different thing, even mm-hmm. though it can be very powerful and very expressive. But it's different, and I think the important thing is that we're really trying to see the nature of thought, the nature of our experience. Mm-hmm. And that's different than that. We're just trying to see it. And cultivating that ability is radically different than the way we are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it can be really difficult to stay with that, is one sense of it. And sometimes when we go with the thought too, we're sometimes missing some of the underpinnings underneath it, some of the grasping or pushing away, or some of the flavors of it. So that's one thing, is that they're different. At least that's the way I would distinguish them. There are a number of ways of working with thought, though, I think, which is can be fruitful in terms of this practice. And one is just, again, many ways. One is just labeling it thinking or wandering and coming back to the breath. That's one level, you could say. Another way is getting a sense of the flavor that's there. So it's kind of meditating. This is perfect since we've talked about sensation and Vedana. Now we can talk about mental states, mental formation. So a lot of times what's going to come with that is there is some mental state that you can get a flavor of it when a thought arises. Oh yeah. Oh, there's anger there. Oh, there's compassion there. There's tranquility. There's not much thought at all. There's tranquility in the mind now. There's a overabundance of rapture. There's some kind of excitement there that's making the mind spin out a little bit. So there can be flavors there. There can be some grasping or pushing away. So sometimes the thought can be a pointer to the flavor of the mental atmosphere. Mental atmosphere might be the best thing. So it's becoming curious about that. You sit here and there's this thought that keeps on coming up. Oh, yeah, yeah. Worry, yeah. You know, whatever word fits. So you're getting not so much the content of the thought, but the flavor. And a couple things with that. I'm a big sensation person, so I really emphasize, especially with this papancha, this proliferation of the mind, to really notice how does it feel in your body. When I have a gripping thought, I can feel that grip.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel that grip, and I find it much more productive to be with the grip rather than the thought, in a sense. It usually allows me to be with it, to be present with it rather than lost in it. So I always go back to that, and sometimes I'll notice the mental atmosphere. Is that making sense? I'm using this word mental. I'm just mental atmosphere. I hope I'm not giving too many options, but one more option. Just because I think they're exciting ways. I actually haven't done this in a while, but I know some of you practice with Shinzen Yang, right? Does anyone here ever practice with Shinzen? You practice with Shinzen, right, Johnny? He had a way of dividing up thought, which I thought can be very enriching in terms of Vipassana practice, in terms of seeing these three characteristics of things being impermanent, that they're unsatisfactory, and there's really not a self there. And that's to divide the thinking process up. So when you're sitting here and you have a thought, it's usually going to be made up of mostly of one of either of these, both of these components, or more of one component and less of the other, and that's talk, you could say internal talking or mental image. And so you can start to notice how internal talk comes and goes. It's almost like you put your awareness, you know, you're the cat at the mouse hole, and you can just notice how talk comes and goes, but you're not getting lost in the content. So this is tricky, but you can start to see the rhythm of it, how it comes and goes, just as you can see a bird coming and going. Oh, and sometimes you can just label it talk. Oh, talk. Labeling can be really good because we know that there's a knowing of what's going on. Talk. Or image, right? And then that's the other one, image. Oh, image is there. Talk, image. And usually thought is really this combination. I mean, one way of dividing up thought is that it's some combination of body, either a feeling or a sensation, emotional feeling or sensation, talk, and image. And then we're dividing up the experience, and just when we divide up the experience and can see it more, then it doesn't have the same kind of grip. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's something to you might want to experience experiment with. It's mm-hmm. And it's really, I want to just point out, this is really rooted in the Buddha's teaching. You know, the Buddha had this teaching of the five khandhas, or these five piles, you can say, that we can divide our experience up. And what happens is there's this, they become clinging khandhas. We start to cling on to different aspects of our experience, and then we create a self out of it. And I think one of his amazing contributions is he divides up experience mm-hmm. into these five piles. And when they're divided up, it's easier to be present with it. Mm-hmm. So that's the theory behind this body image and talk. So I think there's something, it's really using a Buddhist theory in that mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. So, and it can be really powerful in terms of cutting down the identity with our thoughts. Mm-hmm. So... And it's just sitting here, and you can just use that three label scheme of, and I would encourage you to start with the labeling, and so you can get used to it. It's just mm-hmm. labeling body, image, talk, or you can combine them. Maybe there's body and talk, mm-hmm. image and talk. So you could just sit here, you know, image, body and talk, all. Mm-hmm. And what it's going to do is it's going to get the awareness sensitive to that, and then eventually you can drop the labels. Mm-hmm. Maybe all three happen at once. So it's just one way to do that, and to it might help cultivate this different relationship to thought. This mm-hmm. is that addressing? Mm-hmm. Or did I go off on a tangent? Mm-hmm. If I did go off on a tangent, maybe it was a hopeful, a good tangent. Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a couple. Things, Brian. One, in talking about the talk, and it, I've assumed it was, I can get very quiet, but then I can go too far and start getting, I think I'm falling asleep because my mind starts going zing, 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 really fast talk mm-hmm. and really, you know, talk for some more while. Yeah, I mean, I know it's, you know, here, but it's not, I don't know if this makes any sense. So, it's what I struggle with a lot of times is when I'm feeling that, I assume, okay, I'm nodding off, and try to, you know, I open my eyes or stand up or do whatever. And I've begun to wonder if that's really true, if that is. It's like it's not real clear to me where I am.
Just a couple things about that. One is it's great you're picking this up, because one of the things about sleepiness is that the aspect of sleepiness is that we don't notice it. Mm-hmm. And so you're noticing some precursors like the mind racing mm-hmm. and some other things, and it's going to have this feeling of, am I asleep or awake? Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult. I mean, in the Zen tradition, it's got to be a thing of contention. I mean, it wasn't the best practice, but it was an interesting practice. So, and it fits in with this, is that as monks, we were, you'd be in a position where you'd be carrying the stick. Mm. Your job was to hit people who were sleeping. Mm. And it was so common for, and so it was a tradition where you didn't ask for the stick. You got it or you didn't. So there was this pressure to at least look awake. And that would be a lot of... I mean, I'd be walking around with a stick and somebody would be... Because you had to... Somebody would be sitting there... You know? And so I'd hit them. And they would say afterwards, why'd you hit me? I wasn't asleep. So, but that was the quality of sleepiness, is that thinking that you're awake, but actually not. You're not. I mean, and it can really be out of it in a way. So that's the trick with sleepiness, is if you can catch these other precursors like you're doing, that's, you're really on the right mode.
And I noticed too that there's the difference is when I'm spinning off in a story, I can actually feel tension or tightness or something across my forehead. Mm-hmm. But when I'm spinning in this kind of, you know, mm-hmm. things you don't think you would ever think of, kind of mind going zing, 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 that's why mm-hmm. it feels different. And that's why I think I'm mm-hmm. falling asleep.
That's great. So That is really, it's really great. It's just noticing those precursors. It's really, yeah, I just have to say that again, it's good. Because that's such a difficult thing to be aware of. And then it's what you're going to need to do is really respond at that point. Really opening your eyes and looking around. Because now you're aware of the precursors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when you notice that, just, I'm just going to look around. Even if you don't think you're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because that's a real key to be able to catch a precursor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's you're definitely going on the right track. Everything's unfolding fine. Now it's just bringing, looking around, looking at some lights.
Mm-hmm.
Right when you notice that. And there's going to be, I don't need to. So it's going to have to be fighting against that. Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I've been exploring is when I have a feeling of, kind of like what you were saying about boredom. I don't want to be here. I don't want to sit anymore. Isn't it time? Yeah, I'm not looking. But I mean, I'm, you know, feeling that stuff. And if I pay attention to it for a minute, I've explored it in my body and didn't notice it anywhere in my body, and oh, it's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And just was with that for a moment, and then it's like it's gone and has no power at all.
Sweet.
So it's for trying to figure out the difference between feeling and thought, kind of, you know, in observing when something comes up. Because I know you've talked about feelings.
You mean feeling in terms of vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, feelings in terms of emotion?
Emotion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, a couple things about that. It's kind of what I was saying Thursday night, what Saito Upendita suggested to me. Don't be looking for something. If you notice that it's a thought and it comes and goes. Just to notice whatever's there. And then if you notice that there's an emotion there, fine that you notice there's emotion there and does whatever. But not to look for an emotion. So you notice that, yeah, there's that thought, oh, I don't want to be here, and da 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 da. And then you notice it disappears.
Right.
Great. And then you just go back to maybe your breath or whatever however you're doing your meditation, if that's your main object, maybe going back to that, and that's fine. So you don't have to look for anything underneath it. Or what else is here? It's more just what's here. Just kind of, as one friend talked about practice. Practice in some ways is very surfacey. Just what's going on right now. Make it really simple. So catching that thought and noticing going away, just that. That's great. That's perfect. You're doing the practice. That's it.
Well, that seems, and I'll be quiet after this. But it seems that when I pay attention to, it seems that all of my clinging or aversion is thoughts. It's not coming from feelings. It's not coming from physical. It's thoughts.
There you go. Yeah, great. So there you're seeing a connection in your experience right now. There's the thought, and that seems to be the precursor or the flavor of this wanting and not wanting.
Yeah,
yeah, great. Yeah, that's right on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask one?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think one of the reasons why, you know, aversion from boredom is that I get nervous when I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I think, therefore I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking. It's a fear of nothingness or the fear of what's underneath there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so a few things about that. So there's some things you might want to experiment with. And again, this is to experiment, to get a taste of it. You might want to become curious about the dynamic that's happening. So what might be happening, and I'm guessing here, but just your description, I wonder if this is that's going on, is there could be the sense of your body and your mind starting to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's probably something connected with the feeling of settling, like, this isn't safe. And then there's a wandering off into thought, or I want to do something else. And then maybe there's some settling, and then that happens. Okay, so some things... Could this be what's going on?
Yes,
okay. So some things to become curious about then is one is to really just allow that rhythm to be there. Rather than I need to be in this space, can you see that rhythm? Okay, so that's one thing. Because in some ways, for the more settling to take place, it's going to be going along with that rhythm. So that there's a natural settling that happens. Because if you just totally settle at one point, what's going to happen is then there could be a strong reaction. Whereas if we're following this pace that's going on, there might be something else. So one thing to be aware of is, okay, I hope this isn't too much. One is that the feeling of settling in your body is to notice that that's a different feeling than the uncomfortable feeling about it. Okay? So it's becoming curious of what does it feel like to settle, and then to notice that there might be some reactions to that. Does that make sense? And that they're going to be, you could say, metaphor, just speaking in terms of usefulness, there's kind of these two experiences are going on at the same time, and the more that you can see that they're different things, just seeing that is going to really help. You don't have to do anything about it to notice there's a settling, and then there's going to be a reaction to it, a boredom, or I don't want to be here, or thinking a lot. So that's the first stage. The other thing is, at times you might want to, even when you begin a sit, so this is another thing that you might want to experiment with, and this is going to help with allowing the settling process to happen, is like we did today, is really allow yourself to arrive in the room. Maybe start each sit. And I know they don't talk about this in Vipassana, but it's a good thing to do. And that's to allow your eyes to go where they want to go. And to notice sometimes when you allow your eyes to go where they want to go, just that might bring some settling to your body. So you notice that and you come inside with that. And then you bring your awareness out before the thoughts begin. So because what might be happening is you're settling and then this other reaction starts. So you might want to almost not meditate before that other reaction happens to the settling. Is this making sense?
In other words, open my eyes again.
Right when you feel the settling, it's like, yeah, I just feel a little bit of settling. And I'm going to open my eyes again, kind of come out. And then I'm going to allow just a little bit more of the settling.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's like two things are coupled together that we want to give space to and to see. And let me know how that goes, because then there's some more things we can do with that as well. Okay. Anything else? Something more?
Uh-huh. You actually triggered a memory for me. When I first started meditating, I was doing longer retreats. I find myself with my eyes suddenly open and biting my nails. It wasn't safe to settle. And there was a tension in the body that to relax meant something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these were body memories from, you know, childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a long time to learn the precursors in order to settle down and to find that it's okay to sit still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do, right? It's just almost allowing ourselves or the system know it's okay to sit still, but it really gets connected with it's not safe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is really important too, is that this can be physiologically significant that we allow this, because, you know, if you think about it biologically, this is not safe.
No.
And so it's important if we've had experiences where that hasn't been safe to, but it's amazing how our system can relearn that too.
Mm-hmm. I learned I was carrying a certain level of stress to protect me all the time, and all it did is stress the body. You know, there'd be tension. It took a lot. You know, there's unlearning. You can relearn.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if you have a sense of what helped bring that about. If there was anything specific, or was it just doing the practice, or if there's something specific?
It was both meditation and therapy. My therapist used to say, well, if your foot could talk, because I'd be jiggling my foot doing it. They ask really bad questions. Sometimes the trick questions, like, where do you feel it in your body like you're supposed to feel, you know? So the combination of the two together, really.
Nice, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now there's a safety that you probably, yeah,
mm-hmm.
sweet. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, yeah, that relearning or that unlearning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I just get excited about the sets. It's probably some craving underneath there. But I just want to point out that kind of change also, I think, is important to see that that's also in the fabric of awakening. Because what we have is actually, in a sense, a system that isn't being with the way things are. It's like, it's actually safe here, but it doesn't feel safe. And then getting to the point where we can sense that, that's like, we're in line with the way things are. Not the way we want them to be or we think they should be, but the way they actually are. So there's that shift, which I think is on the road to waking up. And literally our physiology waking up. Not just, I have this insight in my head about impermanence, but something has changed. Yeah. So thank you for that example. Okay, let's forget all about that. Set that aside.